All right, let's talk Genesis and manhood, and this will be our first part here. We need to go back to the blueprint when we're talking about manhood. We want to go back to the Bible, and that will help us. So when we look at that, we're looking at the Genesis myth. And don't let this fool you. Myth is not synonymous with fiction. I used to think it was. You'd hear somebody say, oh, look at you, the man, the myth, the legend. I used to think that that was just something. Or when you think of mythology, you think of Hercules or Zeus and all of those. But actually, Webster's defines it as this. A myth is any real or fictitious story that appeals to the consciousness of people by embodying ideals or realities. And so there's a myth that when it's told, it gives you the ideal. And when you think about that, there's the Abraham Lincoln myth. He's a mythic character. When we look at Lincoln, we look at basically the standard of what a president should look like. And we could go on Jordan. Michael Jordan is mythic. That's a standard. That's somebody that's something to shoot for. And so when we think about the Genesis myth, realize that's a real story that appeals to the consciousness of people, and it embodies ideals and realities. So myth is not synonymous with fiction, but also a real myth explains and measures our reality. And the myth of Genesis explains and measures manhood both in its original ideals and in its ongoing fallenness. Explains it. And it also, Genesis also describes our ancestral roots. And so if you were to look at it as a camera lens, Genesis 1 is a wide angle look there, a wide angle. And then as you move into Genesis chapter 2, it's a close-up. And then we come to Genesis 3, and there's a tight focus there. So what does Genesis 1 say about manhood? Well, it speaks of male and female value. Look at these verses here, Genesis 1, 26 and 27. Then God said, let us make man in our image, after our likeness, and let them have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over the livestock, and over all the earth, and over every creeping thing that creeps on the earth. So God created man in his own image. In the image of God, he created him. Male and female, he created them. And so we see there, first of all, we see image. The image of God. He's a copy. When we look at man, we can see the image of God in him. And then secondly, equally endowed, equally valuable. Male and female, equally endowed, equally valuable. And lastly, thirdly, unique and special. So there's value with men and women, male and female. Then B, it speaks of male and female calling. Look at verse 28. And God blessed them, and God said to them, be fruitful and multiply, and fill the earth, and subdue it, and have dominion over the fish of the sea, and over the birds of the heavens, and over every living thing that moves on the earth. So there's some calling there. First of all, be fruitful, multiply, fill the earth. Secondly, subdue the earth. Thirdly, rule over the earth. And then it hints at a very important social structure. We've already read verses 26 and 27, but I want to focus your attention on chapter 5, verse 2. Male and female, he created them, and he blessed them, and named them man when they were created. Isn't it ironic that there's structure there? They're called man. Both male and female is called man. When we talk about the history of mankind, that's not just the history of men, male and female, but under the umbrella of man, male and female reside. Okay, let's keep going. Well, as we move from that wide angle now to a close-up here, what Genesis 2 says about manhood? A, notice Adam was created first, with this verse 7 of chapter 2, which says, "Then the Lord God formed the man of dust from the ground and breathed into his nostrils the breath of life, and the man became a living creature." Now, why didn't he create them at the same time? He did that with other animals. Because they aren't animals. Oh, yes, they are scientifically. I understand that. But we're different. We're made in the image of God. But why didn't he create them at the same time? Well, there's a reason. God knows what he's doing. B, Adam is given an occupation and responsibility before Eve's creation. Look at verse 15 of chapter 2. "Then the Lord God took the man and put him in the Garden of Eden to work it and to keep it." So he's got a job to do. It's before the fall. He has responsibility. And then C, notice Adam is instructed by God with the responsibility of leading with his word. Look at verses 16 and 17. "And the Lord God commanded the man, saying, you may surely eat of every tree of the garden, but of the tree of knowledge of good and evil you shall not eat, for in the day that you eat of it, you shall surely die." So God gives him his word. And then D, notice Adam names the animals, and that's a signal of his leadership over creation. Look at verse 19. "Now out of the ground the Lord God had formed every beast of the field and every bird of the heavens and brought them to the man to see what he would call them. And whatever the man called every living creature, that was its name." And then E, notice Adam is given a helper suitable for him, a title that offers further evidence of God's original core social identity for the man and the woman. Look at verse 18 of chapter 2. "Then the Lord God said, it is not good that man should be alone. I will make him a helper fit for him." So we see each step of the way as we tighten the lens a little bit more. We see what's going on there. Well, let me ask you some questions as you think about this. What's the most significant truth that you heard today? Secondly, how did this session expand your understanding of Genesis, of manhood? So I want you to be specific. And then lastly, how could this information from Genesis be used to begin formulating a definition of manhood, and then explain that? So this is just our start of Genesis and manhood.